Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Football Rambles Guide 2. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
I'm Pete Duddleson.
And I'm Andy Brassel.
A tactical innovator.
All this tippy-tappy stuff, everybody keeps going about the right way to play football, is all a lot of...
A thought leader in the field of technology.
They get tested to every level and what the maxims are.
A transfer market disruptor.
Oh, absolutely sublime from the French World Cup winner.
Sam Allardyce has been all these things.
Sam Allardyce is a genius.
He may now have a reputation as the last resort for a relegation firefight, but it wasn't always so.
Cricket! Promotion!
Between 1999 and 2007, he transformed Bolton Wanderers, the club where he started his senior playing career in 1971, into a modern outfit that ruffled feathers, blooded noses, and defied expectations. During his reign, they'd gain promotion to the Premier League, reach the League Cup final, and even qualify for an adventure in the UEFA Cup.
Ricardo Vaste strikes the equaliser with 3 minutes to go here, and the Portuguese crowd is stunned by a Portuguese youth international.
One of the first managers to use Prozone, his meticulous data-led approach brought results that were seemingly against the odds, and his way with people meant that the most unlikely of players would regularly rock up in Lancashire and get stuck in.
You're in your care. And Okocha. Oh! Fantastic!
World Cup winner Yuri Djurkaev, Real Madrid's Ivan Campo and Fernando Hierro, the dazzling JJ Okocha, Nicolas Anelka, and many other high-profile names joined the cause. People said it wasn't pretty. People found their style abrasive. People didn't like them. Did he care? Yes, he did. But he absolutely loved it, and he was really, really smug about it. So settle down and listen, because you might learn something in the Football Rambles Guide to Sam Allardyce at Bolton Wanderers.
Here we go.
Here we bloody go.
Get in the high-backed armchair.
Damn right. A lot of you have been asking for this topic, interestingly enough, including the weary writer a couple of weeks ago who tweeted, when are we going to get a Rambles Guide to Allardyce's Galacticos? Give the big man some credit and relish in the incredible Bolton team he put together. Yes, I mean, we are recording this before the final weekend of the Premier League season.
Yeah, but I don't think whatever happens in that situation, this will not diminish his achievements.
at Bolton.
Or eclipse them.
Or eclipse them.
Yes, of course, he managed Bolton Wanderers between 1999 and 2007. And when he took over, they were in the old Division One, or the Championship, as it's called now. And they went all the way into European football. It is quite incredible to look back at those times and remember them.
He had a very different reputation, didn't he?
Yeah.
You know, the idea was always, what could Sam Allardyce do with a big budget? Because he seemed like this really sort of up-and-coming, exciting new manager at Bolton. And yes, sometimes the style was abrasive, but it wasn't always as well. I think that's one of the things that's been forgotten about them. They didn't, it's not like, there's this idea that they were sort of long ball merchants and that he's always been like boring and playing to percentages, which to a degree he built his style on the idea of playing to percentages, I suppose. But they had some really talented players in there. And they would play some good football sometimes.
Well, you can't attract some of the names that he did. And for them, you know, some of them are loan deals as well. And you thought, well, okay, they'll go on a loan deal because they're maybe not playing for the club. I mean, that is a coup in itself.
Yeah.
But you can sell a loan deal, 6 months loan deal, to something like Bruno Ngoti or something like that, who came from Marseille, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, you can sell a loan deal, as I say, and think, come on, we're in the Premier League. Come down, you'll have a lovely time. None of these players stayed.
I mean, there were two sides to that, weren't there? Because when these sort of players started coming to Bolton, it was, I think it's worth underlining what a huge shock it was. The Premier League, people were really stunned. But I think there's a couple of things that are apparent here. Firstly, the fact that Allardyce was always looking to innovate, whether it was with tactics or recruitment, and he was just finding a way to get it done. If you get it on that short-term deal, you can sell it to a player because it's just short-term. You're not prejudicing the future of the club because if you go down, you don't have to keep them and you don't have to keep playing them a fortune. And you start building this incredible reputation.
And it shows you that his way with people. I mean, again, the reputation.
That's it, isn't it? That he can relate to these big players.
Yeah. And when he convinced them. Part of it, I think sometimes one can forget how transfers work. You know, people think, oh, well, I want to play for that club in that crowd and blah, blah, blah. There's an awful lot of negotiation going on, and the manager often plays a key role in that. And he did. You know, that club was, at that time, was built in his image and so on. And again, like, we've had a laugh about Sam Allardyce over the years, but that's based on some of the silly things he comes out with and so on.
But that's all part of it, isn't it? There seems to be a very different public persona compared to the persona that players talk about.
It kind of betrays that a little bit, I would go as far to say. And Allardyce, maybe sort of he enjoys it and that's his kind of personality. He's maybe having a bit of fun or whatever. But it's also sometimes he does sound a little bit bitter sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think if you know this Bolton side, they were great, and we are, you know, that's why we're talking about them now, and a lot of people remember them. It just didn't quite win a trophy, but I don't think that sullies it particularly. But Allardyce, he does sometimes, you know, almost like talk himself up, and it's never nice when people kind of do that, really.
No, and I think because there was a lot of churn, you would say, in the Bolton side, like he brought players in for short contracts who and then moved them on. And I think once he did have a massive backroom staff. He did have a lot of, like, sports massage people on hand as well.
That was just for him.
That was just for him. That was just the massage the necks as the ball was flying over the top of them, as they say. I do think that kind of like, oh, this guy seems to know what he's doing. Yeah. He's got brought a lot of tech in. He's got us on vibrating plates and make us want to poo ourselves, which is what literal description of how those vibration plates work from a Newcastle player when he joined. But
for a moment, I thought you meant to eat off of.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, wouldn't it? Gravy going everywhere.
It's just a more exciting
way. You got your bib, don't worry about it.
But he had a phrase called Pomo that he would shout quite a lot. Position of maximum opportunity.
Yes.
And that became a kind of byword for loan shit. Yeah. So I do think that, like, I think it works with a new player coming to the club. So I go, oh, this guy's using a lot of, like, new stuff I've never seen before. And then you start to go, I mean, he's bought the stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he knows how this all fits together. But he got results.
But he did
a lot of churn.
I mean, that's quite interesting when we're talking about he has this modern reputation of being quite self-aggrandizing. You're thinking, well, you know, maybe it's because he didn't get the credit for how good this is. And he's understandably a bit put out about it.
Yeah.
But I think he was always like that. But back in those days, Allardyce and Bolton were an underdog story. I mean, Palermo's quite a good example of that, because that was such a key tenet of what he did. You know, the idea that, you know, he analysed the statistics, and if you put in a long throw, where's the place that it ends up the most often after that long throw? That's where you stick a player to put it in the back of the net. It's playing the percentages. He never invented that phrase. That comes from Charles Hughes, the director of coaching of the FA, who, again, was much reviled, had a massive chip on his shoulder because he felt that he wasn't given the credit for how innovative his methods were. He thought up that, what, 10 years before? And Allardyce has said, right, I'm going to have that.
But I mean, he is also using new technology to really drill down in that and to apply it in a way that maybe wasn't possible before. And I think the thing that probably annoyed him a lot is that he has brought in this, what is, you know, widely regarded to be an innovation in terms of using those technologies. Then everyone else has adopted it and called him a dinosaur.
Yeah. But it wasn't just him, though, was it?
No,
I mean, they were doing it all over the world.
Steve McLaren was using it, interestingly. I think it was he at Derby? And then when he went to Manchester United and said, I want to use this here. And I think Prozone said, you're going to have to pay us some money if you win a trophy or something.
50 grand a trophy.
And they, of course, they won the treble that year. So he wasn't the only one using it.
Progressing an existing concept.
Absolutely.
I think he used technologies in, like, certainly when he was at Newcastle, which I obviously know a bit better than his time at Bolton, but like he set up these lots of like speakers. So Big Sam would be mic'd up, and every time, like, you know, the ball was like whacked up to Mark Viduka, he'd sort of go, oh. And it was really loud, and all the players just cracked up. They couldn't stop laughing. So just him going,
"Oh, why was he doing that?"
I don't know. Presumably this is marginal gains. I don't know, using technology properly. I don't know.
No,
making sure the players knew exactly what he was saying at any one time. Ooh,
didn't work out for him at Newcastle.
No, it didn't work out for Newcastle.
Yeah, it's when he got on the loudspeaker at the stadium. Every time they got near the goal, fans didn't like it.
But him leave. I mean, we'll probably go on to it. But the whole reason why he left Bolton is just because they just didn't want to spend the money that he wanted.
Match
his ambitions, really. Yeah. And he wanted to speculate to the tune of like 6 or 7 million on a couple of new players. And the club sort of went, we could find ourselves in a bit of trouble chasing this European, the Champions League spots that they never got in the end. And that they could find themselves in the Championship.
He took them.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't take them into the Champions League, but that's where it got to. And to go back to the start, when he took the job at Bolton, he replaced Colin Todd in November. And he had resigned because the club was selling players to raise funds for the new Reebok Stadium. So that's the situation you're in. So not a lot of cash, but an impressive stadium. Especially Bolton is not a huge city or anything like that. I think because of this team, Bolton became... I mean, for crying out loud, you know, Bayern winger Kingsley Coman revealed recently that his favourite English team was Bolton because he grew up watching the side.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of people abroad will have heard of Bolton purely because of the football team. A bit like Blackburn, I suppose you could say. Yeah. Similar sort of size of place and all that. So when Allardyce comes in, team morale's obviously very low. He arranged a team bonding holiday at a five-star hotel in Cheshire. But things didn't quite go to plan on that holiday.
Yeah. Well,
what's
still...
the first thing that happened?
Yeah.
He still had Colin Todd's son playing for him, didn't he? Andy.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
Who was no shrinking violet, it is fair to say.
Yeah, I mean, so essentially the first thing that happens, first thing of note in his reign is they're on this team bonding session. They go for a round of golf and then they all get quite drunk. And Andy Todd, as we've already discussed, is Colin Todd's son. Apparently he's a bit of a hothead. And he breaks Phil Brown's jaw.
Bloody hell.
The rumour is that he did it in a toilet with an ashtray.
Oh man.
I don't know how true that is.
God, where do you ever see an ashtray anymore?
It's just... Yeah.
Well, not in a toilet.
In a toilet? What sort of golf club is this?
Yeah.
I thought... reminding of that story of Jules Breach. But that was very much on inanimate objects.
I've been to a wedding at Mottram Hall and it is... very, very nice.
Mm. Very exclusive.
I think...
Well, it's five star.
I think it's... Bolton are like, you know, they're in Bugsy Malone or something.
Just, well, moving on to when he was at Newcastle, and we're not talking about that, obviously, but when one of the first weird days they did was in Austria, in a place, and apparently the bar bill for cigars and brandy was... absolutely horrific. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think
no
Mike
more
Ashley,
summer signings.
No, I think Mike Ashley was footing the bill by that point. But yeah.
The fireplace
but they,
cleaning bill.
But they apparently...
he'll pick out that bill.
But a lot of the... you know, at this point, football is very professional. And I think some of the footballers for Newcastle United were surprised that... a lot of the staff were smelling of alcohol in the morning, which is not a good look.
Absolutely incredible. Yeah, well, Allardyce managed to turn things around that season. So they went from the bottom half of the table to finishing in the playoffs and also got to two semi-finals of the FA Cup and the League Cup.
While amazing. While in the second tier. Really impressive stuff.
Very impressive.
Like, there aren't enough games to contend with already.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. So he was handsomely rewarded with a 10-year contract. Blimey, this is going well. We'll keep him.
Proto-Pards.
He was forced to sell a couple of big names in that summer, including Idagar Johnson. But he did have a young Kevin Nolan coming through the ranks from the youth team. He would play 377 games under Allardyce over the course of his career, scoring 70 goals. Not a striker. And that is quite something. Nolan and Allardyce, just a match made in heaven. Yeah. Mm. And again, talking of the, you know, the Pomo stuff of position of optimum, whatever you said.
Of maximum opportunity.
Thank you. Nolan just gobbled all that up. Nolan was one of those players who you think, what is he good at? He's not particularly quick. He doesn't just so effective.
Yeah. Mm. Bottom's so Brian Robson, really.
That's harsh on Brian Robson.
Is it?
You don't think?
I think it's compliment to both of them.
Compliment to both of them. Allardyce reinvested the money from those sales from Good Johnson and the others into improving the facilities and backroom staff, which helped them enormously, of course, when they returned to the Premier League.
That's a real key point.
It is. It really brought that club into the modern era. Now, of course, they've already got the stadium coming. Mm. It's already having a shiny stadium, but if you don't have the facilities and the tools to make sure those who are performing in the stadium can get the best out of themselves, then... you know, you don't want to be that club who, you know, the away fans go, well, thanks, this has been great for us because it's a lovely stadium and we win here, you know.
Yeah.
He's credited, of course, with using a lot of these forward-thinking methods. And it's thought that when he played for Tampa Bay Rowdies in the US in the early 80s, and that was following two seasons at Millwall, very different places, Florida and that part of London, he saw methods being used there by the NFL side, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who the Rowdy shared a stadium with. And he found their use of technology quite incredible because football still is a little bit in some part, but not so much these days, but certainly back then. It was always seen as a very passionate game and blood, guts and thunder and so on, especially in this country. And NFL were using, again, it kind of, because of the style of the game,
yeah,
were using data and technology and so on. And he was intrigued by this. He said, well, how can we do that in football? And as you say, he wasn't the first one. There wasn't many doing it when he started doing it.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Our use of statistics and advanced statistics in football is still relatively in its infancy.
Mm.
And we're talking about nearly 25 years ago now. It's remarkable. Whereas American sports in terms of statistics, in terms of advanced statistics, is really ahead of the curve when it comes to UK sports. So I think that cultural crossover is quite interesting.
And it is interesting when you actually look at some of the percentages and stuff, you know, playing the percentages and whatnot, when he found that, you know, 33% of goals, I think, came from set pieces. So you think, right, well, that's a third of all goals. So let's, and they were big on set pieces, Bolton. Yeah. So how can we utilise that? And I think Allardyce was sometimes bitter because people say, well, they only score from set pieces. It's like, well, that's a goal.
Yeah, and I think
Southgate's England in 2018 were very set piecey.
This is straight, what we were talking about before, this is straight out of the Charles Hughes playbook.
Yeah.
So again, something that he was really criticised for.
Mm.
And I think with both of those, both him and Sam Allardyce, when they talked about, you know, destroying the fabric of the English game. I mean, that was more laid on Charles Hughes because he was setting the agenda.
That was the FA School of Excellence,
of how football should be played most effectively in England. And obviously, Allardyce wasn't nailed with that to the same extent. But I think the way that Allardyce was looking for it, in terms of, again, going back to maximising opportunity, if you can get the ball forward to the players who can actually play quicker, it's the way to do it.
Well, that was
his view. So I think the idea that you should get the ball forward quickly and have very gifted attacking players, they're not juxtaposed, those ideas. They can go together really well, and I think he realised that.
Yeah, it's like silk and steel, isn't it? But I think the really sort of interesting thing about Allardyce's data-led approach, you would think that football would become a little bit uniform if everybody was, you know, essentially using the same metrics and the same data to try and get the same end result.
Mm-hmm.
But the character of someone still comes through. So looking at Sam Allardyce's Wikipedia page, there was a paragraph that really stood out and really made me laugh because it sort of sums up his style, which came out still through the data.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like that bit at the end of The Matrix where you see its face. This is Allardyce spent his youth with semi-professional side Dudley Town, making his debut at the age of 14. He quickly learned how to play centre half in the highly physical West Midlands Regional League.
Like that's 14. Incredible.
Like the guy's tough.
Never looked
Sam
young,
Allardyce
though.
Is a tough manager. Was a tough player.
Yep.
Clearly, you know, it was all about the blood and the thunder and probably not very technical. And he's got all this incredible information available to him, all this data that can sort of give him insight into how to play the game. And that side of his game still comes through in it.
Well, that's a good point.
And again, I've made the point earlier that it wasn't just about that, but about that physical side of it. But it was a big tenet of it.
Mm. But again, like to get in such players that we've mentioned already, the Djorkaeff and Okocha, so with such craft, and also crowd pleasers as well.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I think that's it. I think he's aware of, people say that his style of football is boring and so on, or not very attractive.
It's just because it's horrible to play against.
Yeah, and I kind of look. I understand. I think for Allardyce, if he'd have come along maybe 10 years earlier, I think maybe he would have been appreciated a little bit more, you could argue. But again, though, sometimes he does sound a bit bitter when he starts. I think he used the word propaganda when describing about playing it out from the back. You know, don't listen to all this propaganda that you have to play football in this way and that way. And it's kind of like, that's where I think he kind of lets himself down a little bit. But the fact is, you know, when with this Bolton side created in his image, they still had some great players in there. And you know, players wanted to come and play for him, quite clearly. I mean, the Greek winger Stelios was being courted by Man City and Liverpool in 2005.
I forgot about Stelios.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
But Allardyce got him to play for Bolton Wanderers, you know. I mean, you know, Fernando Hierro.
I mean, yeah, the pull of Man City in 2005 must have been very difficult to resist.
But the way Stelios explained it is that Liverpool were very, very keen.
Yeah.
And Sam Allardyce invited him in for a chat in his office, locked the door, and gave him the full presentation. And this was at the start of training. Mm-hmm. He signed the contract while he was the contract extension while he was there in the office. Mm. And then they went down and Big Sam announced, "Oh, he's staying!" Yeah. And they had a massive whoa about it. So in terms of making players feel valued, making them feel important, making all of them feel the centre of it, and that he was able to do it with players of this stature is pretty amazing.
Well,
I think
Ivan Campo, who I think when he signed for Bolton, I think 2 years prior to that he'd started in a Champions League final for Real Madrid, and he I think he wrote an open letter to Allardyce and the fans because he never got a proper chance to say goodbye, which he was gutted about. And he said about Allardyce, he had faith in me and taught me to be better, a more mature player. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
You think...
Ivan Campo.
Yeah. Again, as I say, you know, he played under Vicente del Bosque at Real Madrid, won the Champions League and all that. And yet he's saying that Allardyce managed to kind of improve his game.
But by the end of that spell at Real Madrid, he was made to feel quite unwanted.
Indeed.
So to feel wanted again was very important.
Sure. And I think that was very good at Allardyce, you know, getting these kind of... I hadn't rough diamonds, that wouldn't be, but those who were a little bit low on confidence or feeling unwanted, Andy, to use that word, I think is very much the case. So yes, and over four consecutive seasons from 2004-2007, Bolton finished in the top eight each time. That's an incredible achievement.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible achievement. Mm. They reached the League Cup final in 2004. And I think I remember that season, they were, you know, often in England, you have a side who suddenly people are like, "Oh, I quite like them."
Yeah, mm.
And so West Ham have got a lot of good feeling with regards to the Europa Conference League. I know it's not a domestic trophy, but you get a side who people think, "Oh, actually, I've enjoyed watching them."
So Brighton this season.
Brighton have been like that, and Bolton were like that in the League Cup final with JJ Cotter scoring that great free kick. I think it was in the semi final and so on. They were beaten by Middlesbrough in the final. Steve McLaren's Middlesbrough.
The pro-zone party.
Pro-zone boys going up against it. But people had a lot of good feeling for Bolton. The UEFA Cup campaign in 2005-06, where they beat Zenit. They drew with Sevilla, who, of course, went on to win the trophy. And they were knocked out by Marseille. So, you know, they look at where Bolton are now. Look where they have been, really, since Allardyce, you know. And again, as you mentioned earlier, Pete, he resigned when the club were fifth, with two games to play in the 2006-2007 season, because he was wanting to try and get into the Champions League.
Typically abrasive, that, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, incredible. But it's funny, though, how when you look at Allardyce's career, it was like this was his sort of real golden period, because when he does go to Newcastle United after that, it doesn't quite work out. And I think that he really thought, if I'm given a bigger club with a bigger budget, bigger players... And that's where he kind of came unstuck a little bit.
He got given more money in a transfer window than any other Newcastle manager ever. It's like 37 million, which is unprecedented at that time.
Yeah.
So it was, in hindsight, a really bad fit, wasn't it? I think he
was turfed out when they were 12th, which, you know, I mean,
he didn't get time, did he?
Yeah, he didn't really get time.
And really, he didn't have time again, did he? In any of his
jobs.
Well,
that's it. Mm.
And that's a shame when you look at what he achieved when he had it. You understand why he might complain about
it's
that.
It's a little bit like Pochettino post-Spurs. I don't think maybe he realised the power of attorney he had until he walked away from it.
Mm. Yeah. Indeed, I mean, from being given a 10-year contract at Bolton when he's really starting to make waves in the game, suddenly it's very sort of short-term stuff.
10-year contract to a four-game contract is quite different.
But again, though, like with regards to when he saved Everton, saved Everton, he turned them around. They were
finished eighth, though.
They did finish eighth.
He did save them.
And he was kept on there.
From themselves
for a bit. Yeah, and then it didn't work out, because I think now... And this is where the bitterness comes in, is that style of football that he has, which Bolton fans were getting a little bit, you know, well, there was a few Bolton fans who were getting a little bit bored of it by the end of his spell there, in the same way, unfortunately, if things begin to plateau, and that's really unfair to use that word, because if they're finishing the top eight and so on for a side that size, that big, but it's a bit like with Charlton and Kirbishley or Stoke and Pulis, you think, well, come on, we're here, we've reached our ceiling, let's maybe... try and have another go or get someone else in, and it, you know, doesn't quite work.
Yeah, and I think the difficulty is, you see how tough maintaining those standards post Allardyce was. Like, Bolton got themselves into horrendous debt.
Oh yeah.
By the way, you know, the owner Eddie Davies ended up being owed loads of money, and he wrote off like 80 million in loans or something like that, didn't he? It was absolutely huge. But I think that the thing that can really be overlooked, and I guess again, what would be a source of enormous frustration for him, mm-hmm. is big players really listen to him. Mm-hmm. And you talked about Ivan Campo there. I remember interviewing JJ Okocha, and by the way, his long throws, mm-hmm. we think of how brilliant he was on the ball, but his long throws were a huge part of, though, of what they were able to do. It's funny because
Rory the lap.
Yeah. it was funny because I remember asking him on a ramble meet about the experience of playing under Allardyce, and it's funny, almost without thinking about it, he slipped into, what do I remember, when I asked him, what do you remember about playing with Big Sam, and the first thing he said, he switched immediately into Allardyce speak, and he said, don't fanny around with the ball in your own half. You're giving me a heart attack. It was wonderful hearing JJ Okocha say that. I think one of my favourite Bolton moments with him, right at the beginning, actually, before they'd progressed into this European phase and become a real fixture in the Premier League, Big Sam and Okocha dancing on the pitch after staying up.
Yeah.
And it's the Reebok. That was amazing.
And then, and not all of the big names worked out well there, but the fact is, a lot of them were going. He's like Mario Jardel. He was a goal machine for Porto for many years. It didn't quite work out.
I mean, he was the size of a house when he turned up at Bolton.
Yeah, yeah. That was more on him.
Getting Anelka was a real coup,
Anelka,
as well.
Yeah. I mean, Anelka, huge.
Anelka absolutely loved it there, and he was really, really productive.
Mm. Yeah. Stig Tofting. Remember, one of the most terrifying men who ever played the game.
Mm. Yeah.
That was a good fit, I think it's fair to say.
But I mean, but I do just think that by the time he's finished at Bolton, he goes on to other clubs, as we said. I think that maybe the game is beginning to move on, and those methods that people just maybe didn't really want them, they're still effective.
Yeah,
they'll keep a side in the league, but I think the ambitions of Premier League sides, and also the influence from, you know, managers like Guardiola, the Guardiola didn't come until a few years after and so on, but a bit more of a foreign influence, really, in playing style. Mm. They thought, that's what we want. The fans want attractive football. That's what can be achieved. And I think that's where Allardyce kind of thinks, well, hang on, my methods still work. And it's kind of like they do, but actually, I don't know if that many people want them. And that's what stings.
I certainly thought that when he was saying things like that, like that he could, you know, succeed with a bigger budget and a bigger club, etc., that maybe like he could play the scintillating football that others could if he only had the players for it.
Exactly.
But actually, I think he meant my methods will work anywhere with big players. There will be bigger results. Almost like,
but do people want them to work anywhere? Like Marcus said,
that's the point. Because he used to talk about, you know, well, if my name was Sam Allardyce, I would manage Real Madrid and all this.
To be fair to him on that one, I think
he
was very obviously joking on that, and a lot of people, ourselves included, sort of fell into the trap of taking him seriously on that.
But he's clearly got a sense of humour, but I think
there is a sense of seriousness in that.
But I do think that. But I think that's Andy's point. You know, that chat he did with Neil Warnock, you know, when the two of them are sat at the table,
like, they can't help but start talking about gravy.
Like, don't get me wrong. Like, some of it is amusing, and we love Warnock, you know. But I just think with Allardyce, there is that little bit of bitterness there.
Yeah.
There is that kind of, I want people to like me and to respect my methods. And I think that's where...
Don't you like me, you pricks?
Yeah.
But there is a sense of misread. I mean, it's like when you were talking about him at Dudley. Like, if you asked a load of Premier League fans about Allardyce, they'd go, oh, the most northern manager ever.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a Midlander.
Yeah. Sean Dyche as well gets the same from Northampton.
Yeah.
Do you know what though, with Allardyce, and I,
you're not even from Newcastle.
No, I know.
We're lost down here.
Yeah. and hear me out here. Obviously, I've very much enjoyed Gareth Southgate as England manager, and that came about because of Allardyce and all that stuff that happened in Wings Restaurant. And I'm not saying, you know, I would have rather Allardyce instead of Southgate. But I would have liked to have seen what Allardyce would have done with England. I genuinely would have done. I think it's
really interesting.
And I think it is a shame about what happened. And of course, it's gutting for him. And when he got the job, as a proud Englishman in that England tracksuit with his arm folded and smiling, I was really pleased for him. Yeah, I think you have to pretty hard heart not to sort of see that and go, fair
when
enough.
You remember the context of, you know, we've just been knocked out of the Euros by Iceland. It's like, all right, well, let's roll this.
Yeah.
Roll the Allardyce.
Right, there you go. And I think in one-off games against bigger sides, where England have, you know, always struggled, really, I just wonder if actually he, you know, I'm not saying he won the World Cup or anything so like that, but I just ultimately I would have liked to have seen what he could have done.
Yeah, I know. Imagine I know people think
1-0 against Germany off a set piece. Imagine his face. Imagine his face after the game.
That's all I want.
I know, right?
You know, although Southgate even won 2-0. But
people do always think, especially with modern Allardyce, they think Big Sam equals hubris. But I think he was genuinely heartbroken by losing the job that he always wanted.
And I think that photo of him again when he's in the tracksuit and he's just smiling, I actually, he didn't come across as the smug Allardyce. I think there was a dash of humility there of, I know what I've got here.
Yeah.
Look, he has a 100% record, you know. But best England manager ever in some regards. But yeah, I don't know. Give him another go.
Give him another go.
Give him another go. There we are, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us on another Football Ramble guide to you. Remember, we want your ideas for our next guide. Email us at show@footballramble.com or tweet us at Football Ramble with your suggestions. There we are. Pleasure, gentlemen. Big Sam at Bolton. We'll never forget thee. Lord, I love and God bless.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.